Yes, and we're alive and awake here at Double Cross Radio. I'm Chuck Horton along with Drew Lamb tonight. We're bringing you another hour of fact-filled radio, bringing the truth to you. It's like Jordan Page singing about the truth. And Drew, welcome again. It's always great to have a conversation with you.
Yep, here it is Thursday, and I'm skidding in sideways as usual. I'm working on some major projects at the farm right now, and I totally lost track of time. And my wife Kelly called me at 6 o'clock and said, "Hey, when are you coming home?" And I thought it was 5 o'clock, and I barely made it. So I'm glad to be here.
But he did it. He did make it. That's the point. And the show must go on. We kind of like to think of ourselves as almost professionals.
Yeah, but we both own businesses, so yeah. It gets rough. Yeah, I am expanding my microgreen production at the farm right now. So we're
awesome.
Building all new systems and actually expanding fish capacity too. And we're gearing up for a Kickstarter campaign that I'll be launching within the next few weeks. So stay tuned for that, because I'm going to be hitting all of you guys up for some money. So open up your wallets.
Yeah. This is the kind of research that you want to, where our show tonight's about government funding of science. And this is the kind of science and research that your funding really promotes, that really leads to a better society. And unlike the kind that the government promotes, it very rarely leads to a good outcome for society. And so to kind of tell you about what the show tonight, I'm going to start off with a story. One of my personal heroes, I've talked about him briefly with regards to other shows we've done over the years. But one of my personal heroes in life is a man named Joel Wallach. He's a doctor of veterinary medicine. He's also a naturopathic doctor. He's a pathologist, and he's done over 20,000 autopsies on human beings. He wrote a 1,200-page book about the diseases, diagnosing diseases in animals, and every genus, every species that people could think of. And it's the most thorough book of its kind. It took him 8 years of his life to write this book. It's in the Smithsonian Institute. It's a national treasure. And if he did nothing else in his life but write that book, he should be recognized as just an amazing individual. But he's done so much more than that. That's just the tip of the iceberg. It's actually even way out of the water on the tip of the iceberg. He's done so much stuff. And after completing this book, he landed a job working doing some basic research at the Yerkes Primate Center in Atlanta, Georgia, excuse me. And this was part of a program that was sponsored by Emory University in Georgia. Now, they were investigating some apes or monkeys. I think they were rhesus monkeys, and they were having troubles with them. Some of the mothers weren't able to have healthy babies. They wanted to know what was wrong with them. And he was doing all sorts of different tests and whatever. And he happened to kind of stumble across. Being raised as a vet, he had been one of the people who had led in the putting more mineral content in the feed for animals, and it seemed to cure a lot of the problems that farmers were having raising livestock, and so they get more product for their time and effort and money they spent on food. And so the farmers were happy to do this, and their livestock's health improved. And so he knew how important good nutrition and minerals were to mammals. And so as part of his solution to this problem, he started tinkering around with their food feed and analyzing to see what things might be missing from their diet. And lo and behold, he discovered that that they were all deficient in this one particular mineral. I'll tell you what it is in a few minutes. I want to kind of keep you on the edge of your seat and trying to build suspense here. But he found this one mineral where it was deficient, and it wasn't in their diet, so they have no way of making up for that deficiency. So he added it to their diet, and lo and behold, the mother started having healthy babies, and one of the things that they had noticed that they had fairly a high level of cystic fibrosis that was in these. No, it wasn't all of them, but it was a higher than normal percentage. I mean, it's virtually unknown in the wild. So he wondered if maybe that selenium had somehow been. Oops, I gave away the mineral, the magic mineral. Selenium was the mineral, but he wondered if maybe that somehow that was tied to the cystic fibrosis that they observed in these baby monkeys also. And so he began an experiment where they would add it to some and withhold it from others, and they could actually induce the condition of cystic fibrosis in the monkeys, and they could reverse it and cure it by adding that back into their diet. And so he did his, you know, it was a scientific research that he did, and he wrote a paper on it. He gave two speeches on the paper. He thought, wow, this is really going to be great. We're gonna prevent, and we're gonna be able to, you know, we know the cause. We're gonna be able to prevent it from happening, and when it does happen, we're gonna be able to reverse, by and large, most of the effects. We'll save millions of lives of you know, young adolescents who are dying from this disease. And he thought, oh, I might be famous. This might even be bigger than the book I just finished. And but you know, he was terribly wrong. What happened is he got fired. He got fired because there was a consensus at the time, a scientific consensus among people who were receiving funding from the National Institute of Health, which is a government organization, the National Science Foundation, which is a government organization, and all these government financed science foundations, which were the funding arms of the science wing of the government octopus, they were convinced that genetics were the cause of cystic fibrosis, and this was heresy. This was couldn't possibly be scientific because it was going against what was known science. It was known science that there was a hereditary cause for cystic fibrosis, and that isn't true at all. And Dr. Wallach has proved it many times since then. I mean, he's shown his work is he actually, I would think, deserves at least 3 Nobel Prizes. One for cystic fibrosis. He also went on the fact that he could not get a job after this. I mean, he was fired by Emory University. And by the way, just as a sidelight before I get on to the next part of his life and this story, a couple of years ago, someone was doing research on some of the more important but kind of accidental discoveries that had happened in science, you know, like Fleming, and who had kind of accidentally discovered penicillin. And this was kind of in that same boat. I mean, Dr. Wallach himself says, well, it wasn't so, you know, that I was intuitive or nothing. I saw that there was something that was happening, and I wondered if this might be the cause, and indeed it was, but it wasn't something I started out to prove. And so, you know, but at the same time, he was smart enough to recognize it was, and he was brave enough to bring it to the forefront. He had no idea the amount of resistance he would have to change something that had been accepted as dogma. In fact, and this goes back to something I'm going to talk about a little later on, but it's remember these three foundations: Carnegie, Ford, Rockefeller. They have played hell with our lives. They are despicable organizations. So back to the story. So this group had contacted Emory University about this discovery that had been made about cystic fibrosis. And Emory University at first denied that anybody had ever made this discovery. And then they realized, well, there was a paper that was produced. And they said, yes, there was a young pathologist that was working here that did some research. We don't remember very much about it. We don't even remember his name. So they knew his name. They did not want them to be able to find out the true facts of what he discovered. They didn't want the cure to be known. They were shutting up. Why? Probably because it would discredit them forever as a scientific or any kind of educational university at all. And these people were they're despicable. That's all I can say. I hope they rot in hell. anyway, he went on to that's the kind of, you know, they're trying to deny the fact that this truth really does exist, I guess. But he went on to try and get another job, and he is very respected because of this book he had written. He was very respected by universities all around the United States, and he had no trouble getting a job at St. Louis University working in the field of veterinary medicine and research. And he packed up a moving van in Atlanta, and he set off for St. Louis University. And while he was en route, the National Institute of Health got a hold of St. Louis University. They realized that he was going to be hired there, and they told him, if you hire him, we're jerking all of our funding. You won't have another thing funded through us. So he arrives, and he goes up, introduces himself, and they go, Joel, we got some bad news. You're fired. So he hadn't even set one day. He hadn't even been on the job one day, and he was already fired. I mean, this is complete blackballing of him, and he realized that he was not ever going to be able to work in this field of veterinary medicine, which he really loved. He'd spent his college career preparing for this. He had become an animal pathologist, and he worked with Marlon Perkins. Remember that old show, the National, or what was it called?
What was that, United Kingdom?
United Kingdom.
No, it wasn't United. It was Wild Kingdom, excuse me.
Yeah. And they would go into Africa, and he was responsible helping save a couple of really rare and endangered species and bring them to zoos where they could be bred. And I mean, he really was an amazing young man, Joel Wallach was. And this was in the 70s, 60s and 70s. He worked with them. I can't say enough about him. So he had a reputation within that community, but he'd never be able to work in that community again because of he had discovered this cure for cystic fibrosis. Now, I'm just going to do a little aside here. From the 1978 when he made this discovery till today, over 30 million children have died from this disease, and all of them could have been prevented. Now, if you thought my words earlier about these people at Emory University should rot in hell, this is, you're despicable too. Because I think anybody that is responsible for the murder by neglect of 30 million children because they lied to them about something, those people are about as despicable as they come. And these people should be just, they should be living under a bridge somewhere. They shouldn't be living in rich, expensive houses that they made money by raising all these things, by bringing out the victims and getting people to just give them money to do this useless research because they didn't ever want to find a cure. They wanted to exploit this situation to get more funding so they could just, you know, live off of the charity of other people, where because the children were going to need it. They were going to die soon. They would get another crop of victims next year. It's just that's how despicable these people are. I just hate them with every fiber of my soul. So, but Dr. Wallach has, I think he probably has some bad feelings about them as well. But he doesn't bring them out publicly. I've heard him once on his podcast bemoan the fact that all these children have died and that nobody would listen to what he had to say. And now they're just starting to realize he was right. And it's, you know, it's just a tragedy. It's like 30, 35, 36 years later, and they say, oh, wait a minute, this guy was right. So anyway, he went off and he had to start a new career. He got a job teaching about nutrition at a naturopathic teaching school in Portland, Oregon, of all places, one of the 17 states in the nation that allows naturopathic medicine doctors to practice legally. The other 33 do not allow naturopaths to practice medicine in their state as part of the consensus of science again, that the allopathic pill pushers are the true doctors and nobody else knows what they're talking about. So he was talking and lecturing about the importance of minerals in diet, and as a veterinarian he had great experience in the types of things that minerals could cure. Arthritis is unknown in animals because they've known how to cure arthritis in animals for, you know, almost 100 years. Animals, if you have an animal that's diabetic, that animal is worthless. So they figured out that diabetes was caused by a mineral deficiency too, especially type 2 diabetes, not type 1. Type 1 is a genetic disorder, but type 2 diabetes is just a chromium vanadium deficiency. You have plenty of insulin, you just can't, the energy threshold for the reaction to break the sugar down is too high, and you need those minerals to catalyze the reaction, lower the energy threshold so the sugar can be broken down. And that's just a simple cure. The only time I ever got to see him talk in person was here in Medford, Oregon, right here in my hometown. And there was a man sitting behind me before the program started, and I just did said hi to him and asked him if he was here to hear Dr. Walk. So yeah, I believe in this man. I said, well, I do too. And I didn't even know anything about the guy. That's all I said. Turns out this guy had been scheduled to have both of his legs amputated, and he was just in despair. He was even contemplating possibly suicide. He just didn't want to live without his legs. Just below the knee, they're going to cut off his legs. And so because he was kind of grasping at straws, he called in on Dr. Wallach's radio podcast that he does every day, 12 to 1 Pacific time on the GCN radio network. It's Dead Doctors Don't Lie, it's called. And he called in and he told him his problem and everything. And he says, well, okay, here's what you're going to do. And he gave him his whole program. He told him the things he needed to do to get healthy, the things he had to take every day, and how much he had to take. It was based on your body weight and everything else. And he went back to see the doctor for another exam before it was like about a month before the scheduled surgery. And the doctor says, well, wow, your condition's improved quite a bit. I'm not so sure we're going to need to do this surgery after all. I'll come back in 2 more weeks and let's confirm that this is you're improved. Well, he was overjoyed at that point. And he came back in 2 weeks and said, wow, I'm not even sure you're going to need to take medicine. And 2 weeks later, he was off medicine. And the guy sitting up there, as he's telling the story, he is bawling his eyes out. And this is a true story. The type 2 diabetes it's not caused by genetics. It is a mineral deficiency. It's a dietary thing. And no one will recognize. And this man, he went on, he did lots of other, he continued to work on the mineral stuff, especially selenium. He thought this was really important mineral. It was missing in certain areas of the country in the soil, so it was hard for people to get it in their food. And so he was working up some supplements and things that people could take, and he happened to come to an area where it was missing the soil, and he noticed that there was a very high percentage of children there suffering from muscular dystrophy. And he said, I wonder if this could be tied to selenium as well. And so he started to do research, and he did a complete scientific study, all of his methods, everything he did, so it could be duplicated by someone else if they wanted to test it. And he found that, yes, indeed, he could reverse the effects of muscular dystrophy by adding selenium to the diet of these children. He took the information they got to Jerry Lewis. He took it to him for free. He didn't want a penny for it. He took it to Jerry Lewis because he wanted to save the lives of these children. Jerry Lewis was very excited. He ran as fast as his feet could take him to the Muscular Dystrophy Association. He told them, look at what we've found. We found a cure for muscular dystrophy. And you know what they did? They fired him. Just like Dr. Wallach had been fired from Emory University, they fired him. They gave him a severance package that was large enough so he would keep his mouth shut. And they told him, if you ever say anything about this again, you owe us this money back. It was in the neighborhood of $7 million. Well, I don't think Dr. Wallach was very surprised about this, but this just shows you how science isn't really science in this country anymore. This is a man that deserves at least 3 Nobel Prizes. And this is like tens of millions of children that have perished that didn't need to, or gone through hideous lives in a wheelchair, or they're just trapped in a wheelchair. They didn't need to. So why am I telling you this story? Because tonight's topic of the show is there a war on science? And that was the headline on the cover of a National Geographic magazine recently. And they were they were.
Well, Chuck, was
Well,
that Time Magazine or
it
National
was
Geographic?
National Geographic. I told
Okay.
you Time earlier, and I made a mistake. It's National Geographic. And they were kind of lumping the people together who believe the moon landing was faked, and believe that the Earth is flat, and believe that I don't know what else. And they're linking those people in with skeptics who think that 9/11 was an inside job, which I believe, and they believe that vaccinations, there's a link, and maybe it may not be proved yet, but they believe that there seems to be an empirical evidence that there's a link between autism and vaccinations, and that there's a lot of people that think that there's some evils in genetically modified food, because there seems to be a link between all sorts of disorders and this increase in genetically modified food. Like, I used to be able to eat bread. I can't eat bread anymore. I don't know if it's because wheat is now genetically modified, or if it's because they're spraying it with Roundup before they harvest it, but I can't eat grains. And I used to eat grain all the time. And about 20 years ago, things changed. And that's about when they started using the new grains that had, they could get more yield per acre, but not everybody can digest that seed. And that's, they have seen a real rise in what they call gluten intolerance, celiac disease, things like this, which are because this grain is really difficult to digest. And it also could be caused by something else. And there's no conclusive proof on this yet, but I know that once I stopped eating grains, all my health problems went away. So it's, you know, I think that's, even though that's cause and effect, anecdotal evidence, I still, it was real for me. And so, you know, my health returned, and it returned enough that I was able to go out and start another business at age 63, because I feel like I'm 40. So back to this thing about science. It wasn't always this way. Science used to be kind of a poor man's pursuit. It's so many people who were in this, they weren't in it for the money, they were in it for the quest of knowledge. People like Leonardo da Vinci and Galileo, and you know, they made a living by their little things that they would invent, more or less. And in the papers they would write, they would become teachers at universities because of the knowledge that they had attained. So they could make a living with this knowledge. But it was still pretty much just a pursuit of love, you know, like people that have hobbies that they don't really make any money, like Drew and Chuck and their Double Crossed radio show. This is a, you know, something that comes from our heart. This is, we don't make any money from this. This costs us money, costs us time. We do it because we love it. And it used to be that way with science too, but sometime in the beginning of the 20th century, maybe the end of the 19th century, these three foundations, the Carnegie Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Rockefeller Foundation, they were looking for things to support, for causes to get behind. And the Carnegies, the people that were running that foundation, were very much into the eugenics movement. They were kind of, they also ended up, that became a big rallying cry. Adolf Hitler became very interested in eugenics, and the Carnegie's Foundation, and they were very supportive of Adolf Hitler in Germany because of his work with eugenics and trying to eliminate the, you know, the weeds in the human population. Yeah, yeah, we all know how that turned out. Well, that it wasn't only Adolf Hitler that was a horrible monster like that. In the United States, these foundations began these programs, and they had sterilization. They weren't really forced, that they were more or less they would take the evidence to the government, and they would claim it was science. And it wasn't really science. It was no more science than my anecdotal story about my grains, where it may have been true or it may not have been true, but basically the scientists were paid to get these results, and they worked at it until they could make it look like that was a true result, kind of like how aspartame was approved. And of course, Dr. Wallach, in a lot of his work with nutrition and minerals and other supplements, has shown that much of the stuff that was thought to be genetic is really just malnutrition and nutritional deficiencies in certain minerals. Like if selenium is very important for muscle building, for your heart, it's incredibly important for your nervous system. Things that lead to cystic fibrosis and muscular dystrophy are also turned around by that. There's a province in China where he went to, and he lived there for a couple of years and did research where they were having a lot of problem with early adolescent mortality rates were very high, and he again discovered it was very soil was deficient in selenium, and it was a third disease caused by an absence of selenium. He was able to rectify that situation, introduce that into their diets, and the problem solved. And the Chinese government, unlike the land of the free, the Chinese government see him as a hero for being able to solve this problem. They honored him. So that just kind of shows you how much propaganda is flushed down our throats every day in this country. But anyway, in 1932, there was the Public Health Service working with funding that kind of being prompted, I think, by the Carnegie Foundation and possibly the Rockefeller Foundation. They started an experiment called the Tuskegee Study, and some of you may have heard of this. They infected black men with syphilis intentionally, and then they gave them quote-unquote treatments, which are nothing. They're just placebos because they wanted to study them to see what the effects of syphilis were on people. They thought it was a noble cause, and these people were just going to be sacrificial lambs. Their lives were going to be totally ruined. And they were in this study. The study went on for 40 years until someone blew the whistle in 1972. And I remember this because I was in college that time and I was taking a sociology course, and the professor just went off one day on this study because it had just been announced, and he couldn't believe that this happened and that people let it happen and that people being engaged in this could be led down this path, this slippery slope, and to do this and destroy lives of other people thinking it was for the common good or something. And that was one of the more memorable classes I ever sat through at Oregon State. Initially, this study involved 600 black men. They had approximately, 399 were infected with syphilis, and 201 did not have syphilis. Now, the patients were not informed of their medical condition. They used those two groups of people to study the effects against a control group. And the control group was never told that they were sick. A lot of them perished. Some of them passed it on to their wives, went on, ruined another person's life. And this was all being done because they thought that in terms of the people running these studies, they didn't think that the black lives mattered as much as the white lives. That's just kind of people these people are. They don't see people as humans. By the way, I have links to all these things I'm talking about, so I'm going to post them in chat here when I give Drew a chance to talk in a second. But all this was done. This was science. This was consensus science. They were trying to show that science is leading us to a better life. This was the same science that they're trying to push, vaccines down our throat. Now, I believe in vaccines. I believe that vaccines helped us to really almost eliminate polio, except that polio was almost on its way to being eliminated before vaccines were initiated, and then it kind of had a comeback because some people's immune systems are so weak that the vaccines would actually give them polio. And it's still happening today. In India, they give these vaccinations to children, and a sizable percentage will end up with polio, and so much so that when the vaccine teams come into villages, people take their children and run. So, and they don't call it polio, even though it has all the same symptoms and it's paralytic, paralyzes them. They call it something else. It's some kind of a immune reaction to whatever. They don't call it what it really is. It's polio. But what the adjuvants that are in the vaccine, that's where the problem is. They weaken your immune system, and you end up with this exact same disease you were trying to be vaccinated against. And they do this because there's only one or two places in the world that produce these vaccines, and they produce it for the whole world, and they have to be stored so they can have enough in case there's an outbreak or something. And so they're stored in order to keep them from becoming more virulent or dying off. They have to give them nutrients, and they have to give them adjuvants that keep them from, that keep them in a weakened state. So there's mercury in there and other things that are kind of toxic. And those are the things that cause the problems. And all of this started back in the Clinton administration, if you can believe it or not. Yes, the good old Clinton. What harm can they do? Well, it seems that Hillary Clinton needed a cause so she could make a name for herself. So she decided she would improve, since healthcare had gone down the tubes, and that was her big, that was her baby in the Clinton administration, and it was a total flop. she instigated this way to improve the way vaccines were administered. They were going to have one central location that would admit, you know, could distribute vaccines wherever there was an outbreak of something. And of course, it was, because it was run by government, it was a total failure, and it was such a disgrace that Teddy Kennedy even rose up on the Senate floor and gave he kind of blistered a few ears in the Clinton administration, especially Hillary's, with how this was just a tragedy that this had gone from a system that was functioning fairly well into one that just, you know, couldn't save more than a couple dozen people a year because it was so poorly run. And so they had to find ways that they could store all these vaccines and keep them in a, I don't know what you call it, I guess in a weakened but ready to use state without them degrading and becoming useless. And they had to have these warehouses that were at a certain temperature and humidity. So it costs a lot of money to do this. It's just an enormous cost. Vaccines used to be really relatively inexpensive. And there were a lot of companies that made them. They kind of did it as a service to humanity because they didn't make much money on it. And they would always face the risk of a possible lawsuit or something. So it's something that they didn't really want to do. Then maybe they were the ones pushing the government to get involved in this so they could get the monkey off their back about litigation. I don't know. But anyway, that's what was the background story on that. And today we have autism. About one in 50 children have it, get it, mostly boys, more boys than girls, I should say, not mostly, but autism was virtually unknown when I was a child. I had never heard of the term until I was in my early 20s. You that out there that are younger people probably think autism has always been around. Autism was never known. It isn't something that is now known by a different name. It was never around. It wasn't present. It was so rare. It was like one in 10,000 maybe would have it. It's just a disease you never saw. In a town the size of Medford, you maybe have one in a lifetime you'd see one here. It just didn't happen. Well, now we have one in 50. There's autistic children all over the place. And they say that in 20 years, it may be as much as one out of two. 50% of children could be autistic. Well, what's causing this? Well, a lot of people want to say, let's look into vaccines. There seems to maybe be a link. A lot of people are saying their kids were normal until they had the shots. And then here comes the people in the quasi-science industry to say anybody that's a skeptic and speaks out about it, they get fired, just like Dr. Wallach got fired, just like Jerry Lewis got fired. Dr. Andrew Wakefield, I believe that's his name. I didn't have time to get all these names down. He's a pediatrician in England, and he noticed that some of his parents were complaining a lot. Their kids were having a terrible time with the shots, and he realized that. And he believes in vaccines. He never said he was against vaccines, but he was against bundling three or four shots into one shot for a young child because they're treating it for several things. And those adjuvants are instead of getting one set of adjuvants, you're getting four sets of adjuvants. And so it's a much higher dose for for children. And he didn't think it was safe. And he thought that all those vaccines should be administered one at a time. He wrote a paper on it. He kind of relied on some of his researchers to fill in some stuff, and they didn't do a thorough job. And so he was kind of discredited for it. But before he'd even been discredited, he was his license to practice medicine was taken away before all the other scandal hit about the other stuff. He lives now in Austin, Texas. He's been on the Alex Jones Show and talked about this. He's been interviewed by Dr. Mercola. You should go on Mercola.com and listen to that interview. It's very insightful and shows you how science is being used against us and in a lot of different ways. Last week, and I want Drew to go over this story again for those of you who didn't hear it last week. Drew, can you go ahead and start the story about the tribe up in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Well, we're talking about the war on science. This kind of ties into that. But last week I was talking about it was an old story from 2012 about an Indian tribe up in British Columbia that hired an entrepreneur to dump 100 tons of chelated iron into the Northern Pacific to create a plankton bloom that would absorb carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and turn the Pacific into a carbon sink. They paid this guy $2.1 million and they in turn got carbon offsets from this, which could be sold. There's a lot of money in this. And so this guy went ahead and did this, and he didn't get the approval of the NOAA, and they found out about it, and the problem with this is that if you dissolve a bunch of carbon dioxide into the ocean, you're going to cause it to become acidic. And there's actually a problem in the Pacific Ocean with acidification, and all sorts of sea life is dying for various reasons. There are a lot of possibilities as to what's going on, but a lot of scientists are saying that it's ocean acidification. Fukushima contamination could also be playing a role in that as well. You know, as a whole bunch of other things. You know, I mean, if you've got one species affected, you know, it's going to affect other creatures in the food chain. And so, but I've been researching this further, and maybe I'll have some more info next week. But there's big money in trading carbon offsets, and there's a lot of pressure on the airlines in particular to reduce their carbon emissions or greenhouse gas emissions. And so the climate alarmists are pushing their airlines, and there's a lot of research going into alternative airplane fuels right now. And actually NASA is involved in testing a lot of these. Surprisingly, they've been studying how some of these alternative jet fuels cause cirrus clouds to form. And I've noticed that I've seen more cirrus clouds over the last couple of years than I've ever seen before. Those are created from ice formations high up in the atmosphere. And so it sounds like some of these alternative jet fuels, perhaps they have more water vapor in them and tend to form these cirrus clouds. Another thing they're looking at is the effect of global dimming. And this is documented that when all flights were grounded in the United States on 9/11, that there was actually a rise in temperature. So airplane contrails do contribute to global cooling. Ironically, though, the airlines are being blamed for causing global warming. And I have this theory that a lot of these geoengineering projects that we're seeing and the so-called chemtrails that we see blasting in the sky might be programs that the airlines are putting together to obtain carbon offsets. It doesn't matter if this is real or if it's not real. The science doesn't make any difference, because everybody believes in global warming. Everybody thinks that greenhouse gases are bad and that something needs to be done about it. And so there's big business in trading these carbon offsets, and a lot of money to be made, like that one guy that got $2 million for dumping chelated iron in the Northern Pacific, you know. And then you've got the unintended consequences, but nobody seems to care about that. They, you know, so this is what we're seeing, is that science doesn't matter anymore. It's all about, you know, just looking good, you know, maintain having a good public image. You know, we're a green company. We're trying to reduce our carbon footprint, and you could spend an extra $500 on your plane ticket and buy a carbon offset, you know, and feel good, you know. And it doesn't matter what's real. It's
Right.
this
And
it this
anybody who contradicts the quote unquote consensus, their job is at risk. They're probably gonna get fired. And it happens over and over and over again.
Yeah, and you look at this issue in the Northern Pacific. You know, I mean, look at the risk. Look at what happened. But there was some big money exchanged hands over something that is unproven. You know, and they didn't know if this would work or if it didn't. And then the weird thing about this too is that this happened in 2012. And in also in 2012, there was an oyster farmer in Walleye Bay, Washington. There's several of them, but they noticed that their yields were going down, and so one of the farmers started hatching his oysters at a facility in Hilo, Hawaii. Not in the ocean; it's like an aquaculture facility, and they hatch them, and then they ship the larva back to Walleye Bay and put them into the bay to grow. And he specifically blamed ocean acidification for hurting their yields, and he didn't know what caused it, but this the timing seems to be right to me for my research.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I do think that something's going on. I mean, I think Fukushima could be playing a role as well. But this ocean acidification issue can definitely be damaging the ecosystem, and here you go, unintended consequence. Gotta ruin the planet to save the planet. Does that make any sense whatsoever? Maybe we should step back and think about this stuff a little bit, you know, and think about what's really a big risk, you know, what's the biggest risk, and if we start tinkering around with the climate, you know, are we creating more problems? Are we destroying ourselves?
Yeah, and you know it's, and anybody that wants to go out there and put in some kind of a skeptical opinion, their career is over as a scientist. If
And
that's
I might add, I'm planning to bring some things online on my farm. I need some solar panels. I want to ramp up biofuel production. I want to take the farm off the grid. So if you want some carbon offsets, come and talk to me.
there you go. Yeah, it's, you know, we don't agree with the game, but if that's how the game's played, we're gonna play to win.
Yeah, I yeah, and I it, you know, and I think sustainability is good business. You know, if you're sustainable, you're improving your bottom line. And also, I think if you're independent, especially grid independent, you've got a very resilient business. And so, you know, I might be looking at getting into these carbon offsets to raise the funds that I need to do these, to take on these projects. You know, at least people will feel good about themselves,
Yeah,
but they'll be actually be doing some good, you know,
you
for.
will. Those won't have that. I want no. Well, I go on to something else. I can't. I can't. It would go, take me too long to think of all the right words, I guess.
By the way, I want to say hi to everybody in chat. Bon Jovi, Dalnick, Hopper HB, I Am Lone Frog, Jane MC, Jox Rocks, Joe Friday, Jules, Miner Dave, Matty Clues, Road Dog, Vincent, Todd Hitler, and Captain Gringo. And we have some anonymous listeners in the house as well. Thanks for tuning in tonight, you guys.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. It's nice to know that there's someone out there to talk to. You know, just we don't just do this for our health, although it is very healthy to be able to get this off our chest.
It is cathartic, yeah.
yes. You know, I kind of wrap this up. This is one of the very first shows we had. I think this was maybe within the first 10 shows, was a show about the Flechner Report and how it had changed medicine. And this was another Carnegie Foundation funded study to that pretty much eliminated everything except allopathic medicine from being practiced in the United States. And the reason they wanted to keep allopathic medicine is they saw great profit potential in medicine that could be patented and things that relied on nutrition, herbs. There was no money in that, but there was money in things in pills, and at least call it patent medicine, because it was basically they were just sugar pills or alcohol that made people feel a little bit better for a short period of time. And then some guy named Fleming accidentally discovered penicillin, and they had a product that was patentable that they could make money on, and it saved allopathic medicine from death. It was just kind of an accident. But at the same time, if you're a architect or an engineer and you signed on to the 9/11 Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth Petition, you're never going to work on another government job in your life. It's just not going to happen. Jeff Berwick, when he was on last year on 9/11, when we were doing our 9/11 show, he says he knows two engineers personally that lost their jobs after signing that petition. And that was the reason they were told that they were being let go. Because the firm they worked for couldn't get any federal jobs with them on the payroll. That's just how it is. And so you see, we don't really have science in this country anymore. We have the government funds so much scientific research that if you don't toe the government line, you don't get funding and you don't have a job. You don't have a research project. You don't have a doctoral program. You don't have a science program in your university. If you step out of line, you are in a bread line looking, that's how it goes. You lose your house, you lose your car, you're getting food stamps all of a sudden. And the people that, there's some people who are just magnificent people like Dr. Wallach, had his life destroyed once and he rebuilt it. And he's constantly demonized by everybody as being a quack and everything else. And this guy, if people had followed his recommendations in 1978, there'd be at least 30 million children that'd be alive today as healthy adults that aren't. They're dead. And it's, to me, this is a sin this is a sin. I don't know if any God that could forgive this. As supposedly Christians believe that God will forgive all sins, but this is a sin that's just beyond the pale for me. And this is where we're headed in all aspects of our life. This is why we have chemtrails. This is why anybody that speaks up against it, we're labeled as kooks. Like we have tinfoil hats. It's why we have these problems with vaccinations, because people that speak out about it, they're called fanatics and cultists and they don't believe in proven science. Well, yeah, the science of vaccines I think is proven, but the science of vaccines wasn't done with adjuvants in it that they use today, and those things are not healthy. One of the guys I work with at work, he's was in the military, he's in the reserves. And they had to get shots, and he tried to get out of them, tried to get out of them. He could not get out of them. And he had to take the shots. And every time he got a shot, he was sicker than a dog for a week. And I mean, vomiting, high fevers, muscle aches, joints, just aching joints. This is the crap that's in the vaccine. The vaccine itself, who knows? Some of you, I'm thinking most of you that are alive, remember the swine flu scare. I don't think they ever confirmed a single case of swine flu, but over 200 people died from the shot. And a lot of the people developed paralysis on one side of their face, what do they call it? Something Bure, something.
Guillain-Barré.
Guillain-Barré.
Yeah.
And they had all sorts of different side effects that people would experience. And the person that was pushing for all the shots at the Centers for Disease Control, he came on the air and said, "There's nothing wrong with these shots." And then later he was proved there were. There were soldiers dropping dead or being forced to take these inoculations against their will. And the army doctors finally refused. They said, "I will be court-martialed before I give another soldier a shot." And they were able to prove that the shots were killing people. And this guy had to resign. His career was over. That's how it should be every time. is the truth should win, but it doesn't. It doesn't anymore. It doesn't even come close to winning. Has anybody accepted the official story of 9/11? No, we all know it's bullshit. But if you stand up and say something about it, good luck. Jordan Page, he was talking to me about, he said, actually, this was at the concert. He was saying it to everybody, not just me. He said something about, he was a 9/11 truther, and this woman at the table says, "Are you kidding me?" And he said, at that moment, her head spun around three times, just like in Exorcist. And she turned green, and green vomit came out of her mouth. And he knew he was with the devil. But that's people's reaction to you. There's a lot of people, that's how they react. I brought it up once in a group of people, and there was a guy there, was a veteran, and he says, he called me a communist, and he said, "My country would never attack itself to go to war." And he was ready to fight me. He was an old guy. I would have whipped his ass. I just said, "Okay, if that's what you believe, that's what you believe, but you're wrong."
Well, and actually it's come out now that the Saudis did it. The neocons mm-hmm. just stood down, NORAD stood down under the command of Dick Cheney. They stood down. So, it's like, we don't like the economic philosophies of Webster Tarpley, but I like his take on history and geopolitics. And he referred to it as LIHOP, which is an acronym for Let It Happen on Purpose.
It's the same thing that happened to start World War II.
Pearl Harbor.
Right. Same type Roosevelt of thing. Knew they were coming. He knew it a month before they came.
I was trying to explain this to a guy the other day, and he just looked at me like I was crazy. I said, the government's the real terrorist. And he looked at me like I laid an egg. And I said, "Well, so where do you think Al-Qaeda came from?" He goes, I don't know. I said, "Well, did you hear about, do you remember Charlie Wilson's war in the late 70s? To push back against the Russians advancing on Afghanistan?" He goes, "No, I don't remember that." And this guy was older than me. And I said, there was an organization called the Mujahideen, and Osama bin Laden was part of that organization. And Zbigniew Brzezinski was charged with training the Mujahideen, and the United States provided them with arms. And there you have it. That's how it all starts.
Yeah, and it's, and they lie to us continually about it. And it isn't until everybody that was involved is dead that we finally learned the truth about Pearl Harbor. And, it's because people can't stand to have FDR's image tarnished at all, it's quickly swept under the rug again. And I was talking to a guy the other day, and I said, "Did you realize that the police have killed more people in this country since the start of the wars in the Middle East than have died in those wars? The soldiers that have died in those wars, they've killed more civilians in the United States than have died in the war zone in the Middle East." Yeah, it's just completely unbelievable statistic. And while some of those people that were killed by police might have had it coming, it was done in self-defense by the police, I think a majority of them were just murdered, like poor Mr. Harris.
Yeah, I agree. That was absolutely unjust.
Yeah, so governments, they're not about telling the truth. They're about having power over your lives, and they manipulate information to get you to go along with whatever they want you to go along with. And if it means they have to lie about science, then they do it. And this lying about science is how aspartame was approved. That was Donald Rumsfeld's big project. Lying about science is how we're getting somebody standing up in the Oregon Senate and saying that all children are going to have to take a vaccine no matter what. There's no more religious exemption, and that she's trying to propose a bill for this. And I swear I'm in Nazi Germany when I hear stuff like that.
I mean, well, you're in the USSA.
Yeah, I guess. And I think Berwick's right. Mexico is a much safer, freer place than the United States.
Sure looks that way.
And I don't think Mexico's improved that much. I think we've just disintegrated before our very eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. And it seems to be getting worse every day. You know, that they're increasing funding for Homeland Security, so we have more police state. Net neutrality deal with the FCC passed, you know, so there goes the internet. They're going to make it operate like a utility. They're going to regulate it like a utility. Well, so there's going to be more layers of government. Guess who gets to pay for it? Your internet's going to become more expensive, and you're going to see a whole bunch of new taxes, I bet, on your bills.
Yeah, and guess who doesn't have a lot of money to spend on a radio program?
Yeah.
Or a network. Jules gives almost everything away for free in this network. If it wasn't for her, we wouldn't be on the air probably.
No, you know, we show up with content, and
she's donating a lot of stuff for this too, and efforts like this just won't happen with this bill. Our show has a limited lifespan now.
You'll have to have a license to operate a website.
Mm-hmm.
I bet.
Yeah, like a license makes you somehow an expert or something. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show, and we always run out of time, and I don't get to say this. So thank you all for listening. And if you're listening to this on a podcast or a YouTube thing later after the fact, thank you for that as well. Thank you for everybody in chat. You guys really make it worth doing this every week, and really we really appreciate you more than we can say. And Drew mentioned earlier, but I just wanted to echo what he had to say because that's truth also. This is one of the most proud things I do in my life, and I'm really happy to be associated with Drew and David when he's here, and this program and the information we've been able to bring to everybody. So I hope that we get to go keep doing this for a long time, but it may not be.
Or maybe a better technology will emerge.
That's our hope, I guess.
Anyway, it will happen. It will happen.
Until the next time we hear Jordan Page bringing us in with Listen, I hope you guys have a great end to your February, and that March comes in with like a lion for you and out like a lamb. And so I'm going to say good night.
Good night, everybody. You've been listening to Double Crossed Radio on UCY.TV. Tune in again next Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific. Good night. Time with feeling, you're bound to break.